So you see, I didn't create that name, Welcoming the Stranger. That comes from a pastoral letter that was done by both bishops of the United States and Mexico years ago, probably 15 years ago by now, to talk about the issue of fluidity of people crossing over the southern border into our country, working here, going back home. We have a long history, as I'm sure either Christian Minor or Kristen Schneck talked with you about, long history of immigrants from the south coming over the border, and then various programs which expelled them when their usefulness was no longer needed. Casa San Jose, no, let me go back further than that. And in 2003, I began working with Latino immigrants in Pittsburgh. There was a mass, a Catholic mass in Spanish for decades for the professionals who attended the universities, stayed to work as researchers, engineers, medical professionals. And that group wanted to celebrate their faith in their native tongue. And so there was a mass in Spanish for decades. But in 2003, by 2003, the priest who celebrated Mass in Spanish was seeing an influx of laborer class persons who didn't speak English, and they were either starting families or had young families with them, and they needed all kinds of accompaniment. And that chaplain asked Sisters Communities for a volunteer to help, and so that's how I started this service. It was in 2003. The North American Free Trade Agreement was part of the reason that was driving folks. We say that immigration has push factors and pull factors, factors which push them out of their countries, like violence, but massive poverty, just grinding poverty, and gangs. And then there are pull factors, the pull factors being there is a need for laborers. And the laborers find work usually in the backs of restaurants, in the kitchen, in the food preparation, the dishwashing, and so on, landscapers and agricultural workers. The women usually have work cleaning houses. So the group of, so the priest asked me to work with the people. And we did that out of what was called at that time St. Hyacinth Church. It was located right by McGee Women's Hospital. It was an ideal location because buses run there from all parts of Allegheny County. And very, very soon we were overwhelmed with folks seeking service in Spanish. There were no other providers in Spanish at that time. That was 2003. And now, thanks to the grace of God, our ability to change hearts, we now have what you heard in the introduction, an Immigrants and International Advisory Council for the county, as well as the Welcoming Pittsburgh Advisory Group for the city of Pittsburgh. At this time, there's immigrants coming to us from Westmoreland County, Butler County, Beaver County, Washington County. There's immigrants in all parts, but of course a concentration in Allegheny County. So soon I learned what it means to not have a social security number. Very early along, I understood all the implications of being what we call undocumented, without papers, unauthorized, any one of those words is used. The one that our government prefers to use is illegal aliens, and that emphasizes the illegality. It's really a civil offense, and I'm sure the previous speakers talked with you about that. It is not a criminal offense to cross the border without papers. That is pretty much at a stop by this time because of the increased enforcement along the southern border. So by 2004, I was very much immersed in advocacy also. I learned that it was immigration law that was keeping these people from normalizing in this country, and immigration law wasn't keeping up with economy and the need for the workers. So early on I advocated, but the voice that says, what part of illegal do you not understand, sister? That voice is pretty loud and pretty influential in Congress. So it has been very difficult, very, very difficult to pass immigration reform, but it is still what is needed. Immigration reform of some type could give and should give to people who have been here for sometimes decades without papers, and they have their family here, they have roots here, their children are American citizens, and we just need to normalize those folks in a legal way. I'm not saying we can't continue to have control of our borders, but we need to allow for the workers that are needed. And for the, in Allegheny County anyway, the vibrancy that immigrants bring to the county, you know, helping to revitalize neighborhoods in a county that has been losing population. So with the passage of time, with each new president comes different movement about immigrants. Usually immigration is right up there, number one, on the platform that a person running for president will determine. Barack Obama deported a lot of our people, but he did also pass, because Congress wouldn't and couldn't, Barack Obama passed what was called Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals. And that gave our youth who had been brought over as small children an opportunity not to become citizens. It does not allow that. It is a temporary permission to work here without being deported. And as it is written, it has to be renewed every 2 years. But the American public, that's something they might rally around. And if those kids, the Supreme Court recently, you know, allowed it. The president tried to quash it, but the Supreme Court allowed it. And there might be political will to actually give those kids a pathway to citizenship, in which case we would be thrilled, and it would change what we do in our work. At any rate, this is Casa San Jose. Over the years since 2003, the numbers of Latinos in our area has just continued to grow. And because I believe we started off wanting to provide, the mission of the Sisters of St. Joseph is to provide service for those who are neglected. And when we started Casa San Jose, there still was no social service agency that Latinos who, you know, are limited English speakers, who have mixed status families, some citizens, some undocumented, a place where they could go for orientation, connection to resources, to feel welcome and at home. And that's why our logo, which we're so proud of, you see it there on the screen, our logo, it looks, is supposed to look like a window into a home. Casa San Jose means home of St. Joseph. And since I am a sister of St. Joseph, that's where our name comes from. There's some of our workers you see in the photo there. Laura on the left is a real critical worker. Her job is called emergency response. You could scroll down, please, to emergency response under our programs. This is our website, by the way, casasanjose.org. And in our programs, as I said, Laura plays a real significant role as emergency coordinator. The role began as response, a hotline that people could call whenever ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, was at their door. And as soon as President Trump became president, he told ICE to go after the people. So we had a lot of presence of Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE police in our neighborhoods. They would usually go at dawn and park there and wait for the men to come out to go to work, and then they'd round them up. It was a time of a great deal of terror within the community. We had our people very concerned about their children. You know, what will happen if mom and dad are taken? What will happen to the children? And Christian Minor, the lawyer who first spoke to you, he served in a vital capacity helping the parents prepare the document authorizing somebody to take care of their children in their absence. So that was how Laura's program started, to help families navigate that terrifying time when an individual was taken by ICE. So out of that, we started our, you see it highlighted there, Fondo Solidario, where people can contribute. It provides for zero interest loans. If the dad is in detention and eligible for release with financing, I'm sorry, my mind is blanking because I can only think of it in Spanish. We will help them pay for that loan. And then once they get out and can continue to work again, then they pay back the loan. And that Fondo Solidario has been tremendously helpful. Also, we have bi-weekly legal clinics. It's very difficult to get free immigration service. Very, very difficult. So these legal clinics are a half hour consult where the people can at least be told if they have any options to consider to be given some permission to stay in this country. So if you go to our programs, next, one of our key programs is that first one listed there, ISAC, Immigrant Services and Connections. We have two full-time workers, and this was really what helped give CASA its start. In the first days, we were given space in a welcoming Lutheran community in Brookline called St. Mark's Lutheran Church. They gave me free space, and I was in there with a full-time bilingual volunteer. And soon after that, we were able, because of my involvement with the city and county, to get two full-time workers in the Immigrant Services and Connections. That's a program that's administered by the County Department of Human Services. The lead agency is Jewish Family and Community Services. And we have two full-time workers, bilingual, Latino in many cases, and two full-time workers that we were able to engage right away in 2014. So that's very critical. And the purpose of that is to connect the Spanish-speaking immigrants with services. They need if they have children, they need lots of help with their children. Schools, medical attention. Immigrants themselves, if they are undocumented, do not have any health insurance and cannot get health insurance. So connecting the undocumented immigrants with healthcare and legal services are their two primary concerns when they are adults without children. So that program is critically important. Under our programs, another key thing that we've been doing ever since the beginning in 2013 is working with the children. And that would be down below where we have Jóvenes, Puentes, and Campamento. So we can start with Jóvenes. Jóvenes means teens, J-O-V-E-N-E-S, Jóvenes con Propósito. Organizing the teens, many of whom would be undocumented unless they were lucky enough to get deferred action for childhood arrival. Organizing and working with these teens is critically important because they are between two cultures. At home, mom and dad speak Spanish, and at school, everybody speaks English. They oftentimes experience a sense of shame because of their background, and because undocumented immigrants are so reviled by our actual administration of our government. And so the youth also get bullied and tend to feel ashamed. they tend to want to give up the Spanish. They don't want to in any way be identified with being an immigrant. And we use this youth program to instill in them a sense of self, a sense of the importance of their culture, the fact that being bilingual is an advantage. Being able to speak, write, and read two languages is an advantage. And so we need, and just being with one another and being okay to be who they are is very important. We're so proud of them because they have gone with us to Washington, D.C., to Harrisburg, to advocate on their own behalf. And that's part of what helped make deferred action for childhood arrivals more palatable, I think, with Congress people. Also in our programs, we work with younger children, and under our programs, you'll see Puentes, P-U-E-N-T-E-S. That actually means bridges to the future. So we work with small children up to 14 years of age. Once they're 14, they can go into that Jóvenes. And this program we've been running every Saturday since we started. Of course, with COVID, everything got turned around and became digital, online. But we do go to their homes and take materials and supplies. We've been critical in their lives as far as learning what the schools have required during COVID, where the school lunches are given out, and when they could go and get that food, helping communicate with the teachers. And then in the beginning of COVID, very few of them had, digital access. So they were supposed to pick up paper packets at the school. And but now at this point, everyone will have digital access. And our summer camp, let's go to that one. That's called, under programs, our summer camp is called Campamento Sonrisa. We can find that under our programs. Our summer camp is helping several families received computers from that, and we have been able to teach the mom and dad. Really, it's been how to teach the mom and dad to use digital equipment, because they're going to have to communicate with the school. They need to be able to see their child's assignments, see their child's work. So is it possible to scroll down on this to see what any other photos we have on this? Yeah, there we go. So when we could, in the days when we could, we gathered in all these various ways. And the kids just loved it. You know, any kind of outings, they just love. Lots of universities come in and do programming with our kids, because they, their professors find it wonderful for them to get, for their students to get access to the Latino community. That young man there is our Jose Ochoa. He's an American citizen, but he lived most of his youth in Mexico, where his mother lives. He is just fabulous with the kids. The kids are drawn to him like he's a Pied Piper. We're very pleased to have him. And then if you can go to under programs, our summer camp. We're engaged in our summer camp right now. It's way down, the last thing down there, Campamento. And that's called Camp Smile. Sonrisa is smile. And one of the great things is for our kids to see actual Latino, like Jose, Latinos, adults working with them who have gone through high school education and are now, and sometimes college, and they are now engaged with the kids. They really are mentoring the kids about how important it is to stay in college. You know, many of the youth, if they follow the example that their parents are showing them, getting a job and having a cell phone and a car, you know, that's having achieved the goal. But we open up a whole new world with them, that of graduating high school, getting your diploma, going on to some other kind of preparation so that you can have a career, job, as a career as opposed to job. It really helps open up the youth. Okay, I really, really, I failed to say I wanted you to ask questions all along the way. I know that it can be put in chat if you have a question. I forget what the, unmute yourself if you wish and ask your questions. I would like to answer your questions. The COVID-19 has been a tremendous, tremendous challenge to persons who are undocumented because they don't have a social security number and therefore are ineligible to receive any federal assistance whatsoever. And it was very disheartening to find that even if one of the adults is an American citizen, if they have somebody in the family who doesn't have a social security number, they do not receive the government assistance. So that was really tough to find that was happening. We even have some persons, most of our people who are undocumented do report their earnings to the IRS with what is called an ITIN, Individualized Taxpayer Identification Number. And, those people were not given. In fact, if those people were married to an American citizen, that's another reason they were denied help. So the foundation community is very aware of the vulnerable communities. Most immigrants who are uneducated and not bilingual are very vulnerable because at this time of coronavirus, because they don't have any money coming from the government or any assistance coming from the government, benefits. So the foundation community has really been responsive to that need. And we have had money to actually give $700, which, as you know, goes quickly. But we've been able to give $700 to, we're probably going to be servicing well over 600 families with this $700. We also have been receiving donations of food. Monteverde's brings boxes of fresh fruits and vegetables every Tuesday. We are a partner with the Greater Pittsburgh Community Food Bank, and a doctor, an orthopedic doctor, Mark Barrett's, started a program early on called Double Play. And he would make a donation to a restaurant to prepare meals. So that restaurant got some funding, and the meals we would give out to families. So that was a real cool project, and thousands of dollars were contributed through that. Okay, I think I have a question. Oh, and then I wanted to say to you, you can still help us through this coronavirus time by contributing food to Casa San Jose. Our community organizer's name is Veronica Losado. I didn't even go over that program of ours, community organizing, but you can go to our website and read all about us. And diapers. Food and diapers are two things that we are collecting. We don't have space to collect donated clothes or any of that, but we do need those things. And of course, money. Years ago, you accompanied families to the health department, dental clinics, and kindly served as an interpreter. Is there any similar free interpreting service available to families today? Every doctor's office and every school is required by law to provide interpretation to the families. The county started a program called Pittsburgh Language Access Network, and they are a nonprofit. So doctors' offices and agencies like that are supposed to get and can get interpreting through Pittsburgh Language Access Network at a lower rate than for-profit interpreting services. Now, at Allegheny County facilities, they are supposed to provide their interpreting, but I know that dental clinic, I know that they, I'm not sure how they get around that. But right now, the health department is asking for volunteers, and they're very, any volunteer, but especially those who speak another language, to volunteer as contact tracers. And if you want to shoot me an email, see down there where it says jose@casasanjose.org. I'm janice@casasanjose.org. And maybe if you can go to the website that shows our staff, you might be able to actually come to my picture, which might show my email. So if you want to learn more about becoming a contact tracer, that means you would trace the, you would be one of those that on the phone traces persons who have had contact. Sorry, it's not there. It's Janice, srjanice@casasanjose.org. You want to be a contact tracer. I'm sure the county health department would be very happy. There you go. There's my email address. Okay, I think I have another question here. Bower Hill Church was also told there is a need for cleaning supplies. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Sister Karen just told me if I find any wipes anywhere to please buy them. Because anytime a client comes into our office, now we don't see clients daily unless there's a special need to in-person visits. We have to wipe down the table and chair and whatever else, the bathroom, if they use the bathroom. So we're in constant need of wipes and, of course, diapers, yes. Could you talk about the driver's license issue? Yes, thank you for bringing that up. We do have a campaign in the state of Pennsylvania, driver's licenses for all. We would love for anyone to contact their state of Pennsylvania representatives. You have one in the Senate for Harrisburg, and you have some in the, there's our other beautiful staff. You have one who's your district representative, and tell those people that you don't see any reason why undocumented people can't have a license. It just would be so, so critical. We have families who have special needs children. They just absolutely have to be able to drive them to their appointments. And driving to get to places where they can afford the food, like Walmart or Aldi's, those are the reasons they use the vehicles. And there's just, they would be registered with the government. They would be able to know who they are and where they are. They just don't have a social security number. So that's called our licenses for all, PA licenses for all. And of course, Laura Perkins, our community organizer, or our emergency response director, has information about that if you'd like to be in touch with her. I'm looking at my camera to see. We have a few more minutes. If there's anything in particular you'd like me to talk about. With coronavirus, there's also a couple of funds that provide for rent assistance, but those funds are very, very bureaucratic to access. So the people need lots and lots of help getting together the paperwork that is necessary to get that rental assistance. The city of Pittsburgh has one. The federal government released some CARES fund for some rental assistance. Of course, our people would not be eligible for federal dollars. But another agency that has been critically important in providing coronavirus-caused response to need is United Way. United Way has a telephone service where you simply dial the numbers 211. You know how we're used to knowing that 911 is for police emergencies? Well, 211 is for social service emergencies. And because of our advocacy, now if you dial that number, you'll hear Spanish first. And it'll tell you in Spanish, if you speak Spanish, dial option 8. And then the English speaker comes on. So if our people dial option 8, they can eventually speak with a navigator in Spanish, and that person will connect them to resources. So there's been no money for rental payments with this community that I work with, because they work from paycheck to paycheck. So they don't have any savings. They don't have any alternative funds. So paying rent has gone by the board, and paying utilities has gone by the board. So we're very, very aware that a lot of our people could end up being homeless, but we're hoping that that doesn't happen. If we can get more foundation dollars and more donor dollars to be able to help them with their rental payments that are behind, or even help them by making some payment of money and then setting up a plan, if the landlord would accept it, to make payments over time. How many of the families you service have lost employment during the pandemic? Well, I told you we've serviced about 600 people with that $700 donation. That would be how many of our families that we're aware of, you know, that have lost employment, because that's one of the questions we ask them. Have your number of hours of work been reduced because of COVID? And then if so, and have you received any federal dollars? If those two things are no, we haven't received, and yes, our employment has been cut, then they were eligible to receive that money. So hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of families, which has been, you know, which is a critical concern. There are other agencies that serve Latinos. Downtown is an office called Latino Community Center. You can find them on the internet. They also work with Latino immigrants. They specialize in a program called Family Support. That is a program that goes into the homes where mom is pregnant and can stay in paying home visits until the child is 5 years old. So that's a wonderful program. I don't know what they're doing now during coronavirus. I imagine they're just doing it digitally. So it's really important for our people to know how to do digital access to be able to find resources to survive during this coronavirus. I really appreciate your interest in learning about this, the work that we do, the situation of immigrants, especially monolingual native language speakers. I appreciate you wanting to know about the work of Casa San Jose.
You're muted.
And I hope, I really hope that you can pass the word about the need and get your friends to look on our website. We also have a Facebook page. Our people access us mostly by Facebook page, as well as WhatsApp. I don't know if you know what WhatsApp is. It's a part of Facebook. And it's a way for the people to communicate even internationally and not have to pay for it. Okay, does anyone from the church want to say any final comments?
I'm going to ask a question. I'm somehow having trouble with my chat, but way back, you talked about the tax business. And do undocumented people pay income tax or
Yes, they report their earnings through the individual taxpayer identification number, okay. IEIN. And That's interesting, because that goes to the federal government, all that reporting. But of course, the Internal Revenue Service, does its information is not accessible, or at least not that we know of, by the enforcement arm of immigration. The enforcement arm of immigration is called the Department of Homeland Security, and that's under the Department of Justice. And so they don't share, they don't have access to the Internal Revenue Service.
So if they pay tax, but they don't have any access to health care, and that seems to me to be a disconnect there. Am I missing a link, or is that?
No, it is a disconnect, definitely. It is. You can't get, you know, there's no, even if you had the money to pay for it, you can't get health insurance of any kind that I know of without a social security number.
I see.
There's some thanks there to Westminster from the crew from Bower Hill to participate in this education series. Did you tape, Bobby, did you tape this series? I looked on your website and I couldn't find that.
Yes, it is. Ted, you would be able to tell us how to find it.
If you go to the seminar page, just navigate to the seminar page, you'll find a listing of recordings there, including the Zoom recordings for all of these seminars.
Great.
I just wonder your thoughts, Sister Janice, about this is not a new phenomenon in American history. Seems like we go through these cycles of, I'll call it xenophobia, and somehow we cycle in and out of it. How do we cycle out of this?
Well, it's going to have to be political will of the people. And like I said, it's very encouraging to us to see there's political will around these young adults that are on deferred action for childhood arrival. It's going to have to be political will. I think the faith communities have a tremendous role to play. If the faith communities could gather around the concept that this is a moral issue, it's not a political issue. If anyone has been to Honduras or El Salvador or Guatemala or some parts of Mexico, you see the just unspeakable poverty. Lima, Peru, I had the opportunity to be in Peru, or I was a missionary in the Amazon in Brazil. And the what they call them, the periferia, the outskirts of the big cities are all filled with the poor who come in from the countryside and in hopes of a better life in the cities. So if you've seen the poverty there, and then how political leaders, along with, United States multinational corporations helped create some of those conditions that are in Central America. The native peoples in the highlands of Guatemala for centuries have been suffering oppression. And they have been among the families that have crossed over the southern border and come into our country. And we have them here in our Pittsburgh area. They don't even speak Spanish as their native tongue. They speak indigenous languages, as do the people from southern Mexico. And I don't understand those languages. They're very difficult to understand. So sometimes we have to seek interpreters for those languages. So I do think that faith communities could do a great deal. Like if there are, I know in some districts or some areas, churches are in consortiums with one another. That's how South Hills Interfaith Movement, that's how they started years ago. A movement among churches, and they do a tremendous service of to immigrants. South Hills Interfaith Movement. I think their main offices are in the South Park area. I'm not real sure. But now, of course, they work with primarily Bhutanese refugees.
Sister Janice, you mentioned a writing project regarding driver's licenses that would go to the state. If we wanted to write federally, would you have a suggestion as to what would be the most important thing for us to tackle?
Yeah, it would be about the youth. The term to use is dreamers. Right. That there'd be a pathway for all dreamers, because not all dreamers were eligible for DACA. DACA has certain requirements, and they maybe didn't fit into one of those requirements. Just tell them, you know, the time has long passed for these kids, who now are young adults, to have been given a chance, and we want them to get a chance, a pathway.
We should write to both our House and Senate. Folks.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Our two senators, you know, are diametrically different on this issue.
Right.
And then, of course, in the House of Representatives, I imagine your person is Connor Lamb. Is that correct?
Maybe no. Connor Lamb serves the 17th. And, well, it depends. It's split. So it would be either Doyle or Lamb.
Okay.
Well, we have Rushenthaler, but we're not in Rushenthaler.
Yeah, Rushenthaler's very vocal anti-undocumented.
There are two more questions.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Chat. Sorry, I just saw them.
Okay, there is a new online newspaper for Latino folks launched, claiming 30,000 Latinos. Yeah, we just saw that the other day. The woman who's running that magazine helped us on our very, very first fundraiser. She did all our public relations materials, Maria Manatao. She's almost from Puerto Rico. Yes, yes, that's a great, and her goal is to let people be aware of how much the Latinos can make a contribution to our region. Yeah, I definitely recommend it. Thanks for bringing that up. I believe PCUSA has DACA letter writing guidance. Okay. Thank you, Sarah. PCUSA. That would be Presbyterian?
Yes, that's us.
Cool. Wonderful. Great. Glad to hear it. Yeah, most of the religions, like the Lutherans, have a whole immigration core, Lutheran Immigration and Refugee Services. The Catholic bishops have Justice for Immigrants, of which that's another one I need to update my resume. I'm on the Advisory Council for the Justice for Immigrants campaign of the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops. And then there is an organization among Presbyterians for Just Immigration. Yeah, be a part of that. Some of you make a commitment to that, and that there's very wonderful participation from the East Liberty Presbyterian Seminary. I'm using the wrong word for it out there in East Liberty. They are wonderful partners with us.
Well, thank you. This has been wonderful. We've learned a lot.
Thank you. I hope so.
Yes, we have. We had some good questions, and thank you for being so generous with your time, and thank you for doing this, for doing what you're doing. It's just a wonderful thing and so much needed. So,
well, believe me, every morning I start my day with prayer. Dear God, help me to do what you want me to do for your people.
Thank you for what you do, Sister Janice.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Okay. Thank you again.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.